Case number 13-5176, All Party Parliamentary Group on Extraordinary Rendition et al. Appellants versus United States Department of Defense et al. Mr. Perella for the appellants, Mrs. Scarborough for the appellees.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Dominic Perella on behalf of appellants. Our argument in this case is very simple. A representative of a foreign government entity is someone who's authorized to act on that foreign government entity's behalf. Andrew Tyree does not meet that definition. The record is undisputed that he is not authorized.
Well, you do have this dictionary definition of representative as being a member of a legislative body. What's your argument to why Congress didn't use the word agent instead of representative?
Well,
you're saying that's what they meant, right? I mean, that you're talking about.
No, Judge Griffith, I don't think that's quite what we're saying. I think what we're saying is that if you look at how representative is defined, how it's understood across the case law, across the dictionaries, across any source of meaning.
Yeah, across dictionaries, one definition is member of a legislative body.
But the question isn't, is someone simply a representative, full stop? The question is this man a representative of a foreign government entity?
And to wait, we were just focused on dictionary. Let's just take dictionary. And one of the dictionary definitions is that you are a member of a legislative body. Not that you are an agent of that legislative body. And so that's what I'm getting you to address. How do you get around the problem that you have with the dictionary?
I don't think we do have a problem with the dictionary. As we pointed out in the reply brief,
element of a dictionary, right? There are dictionaries that say a representative is a member of a legislative body, quite apart from whether they have any authority to speak on behalf of that body, right? They're a member of that body. And by virtue of being a member of that body alone, they are a representative. So how do you respond to that argument?
The way I respond to it again, and maybe you won't find this satisfying, in which case I'll try again, but is to look at the full statutory phrase.
Okay, so you can't just rely on the dictionary definition.
I think you can, because when you look at what the phrase representative of a foreign government entity means, that means you have to figure out who are they representing. Are they representing a foreign government entity?
Well,
argument was that they were representatives of their constituents.
That's correct.
Isn't that your argument?
Yes.
Yeah.
And let me turn to that, if I might, Judge Tatel. In the 28
years... Is that your answer to Judge Griffith?
Yes. They are.
Why don't we see if he's satisfied with that?
We agree that he is a representative of his constituents. There's no question about that. And so that then raises...
No, but I thought that was your argument, that he is a representative of his constituents, but not a representative of the U.K. government or of the parliament.
That's correct, Judge Tatel.
And
in the government's...
Judge
Bullard.
Go ahead.
In the government's 28-J response letter, they argued for the first time in this case that Mr. Tyree is a representative of a subdivision of a foreign government entity by dint of the fact that he's a representative of his constituents. First of all, of course, that argument is waived multiple times over. But secondly, it's also incorrect. A constituency of the House of Commons is just like an electoral district of the House of Representatives. It's an arbitrary voting block. It doesn't cover a city qua city. It's a line that moves and shifts by each election. And to call that a subdivision of a foreign government entity,
But Mr. Rella, so one way of reading the statute is that it doesn't turn on the authorization of the person. It turns on their identification with a foreign government. And so I'm going to hammer again on that question. You said, you responded to Judge Griffith's question about the dictionary definition that refers to a representative as a member of a legislative body. And you said, when you put it in the context of the whole sentence, it's clear that they're not agents of the foreign government. But putting it in the context of the whole sentence, what you get is member of a legislative body of a foreign government entity. And he surely is a member of a legislative body of a foreign government entity. So by that definition, he's a representative of a foreign government entity. And one way of understanding the statute is it doesn't matter whether he's authorized to seek a FOIA request on behalf of a foreign government. We don't want foreign people of foreign governments burdening our intelligence community with FOIA requests. As far as I could tell in the legislative history, the burden of requests from foreign governments was the one purpose of this rather unusual exemption.
I agree with you, Judge Keller, that the burden from foreign governments appears to be the purpose of the exemption. And so I think that returns you to the question, is this request effectively coming from a foreign government? I think that's what the legislative history is driving at when it says a foreign government entity or its representatives.
The legislative history, the committee report actually talks about foreign persons.
It does. Yeah. Of course, my opponent does rely on that. Again, as this court has said over and over again, Congress chooses particular means to achieve ends. In this case, the means it chose is only to foreclose foreign government entities and their representatives, not foreign persons. In fact, the very existence of the provision means Congress contemplated that foreign persons can, of course, make FOIA requests. But Judge Pillard, to come back to your question, if you look at the legislative history, and if you look at not to rely too heavily on this, but if you look at the title of that piece of the history and of this provision itself, it's about FOIA requests from foreign governments. And I think that what the provision is driving at is this request effectively from a foreign government? Does it come from the entity itself or from its representative? And so, I think the easiest reading of the statute, which of course the most common meaning, the one the court is supposed to give it, is that it has to be someone who is in fact representing a foreign government entity. And I would also just mention, to the extent both of these are possible meanings, this court has said again and again, Judge Tatel, he said in Public Citizen, that the purpose of FOIA is to allow maximum disclosure.
Yeah, but this doesn't have anything to do with that. The only question here, you made that argument in your brief, but that doesn't help you, because the question in this case isn't whether this information can be disclosed, but only who can ask for it. I mean, if Tyre can't, any American can't, it's disclosable, in other words. It's not your normal FOIA case. The only question is question of authority here. So I don't think the presumption of disclosability really helped you.
Well, Judge Tatel, let me...
What do you think about that?
Yeah, let me push back on that if I might.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question.
So, first of all, the government makes a couple of arguments along these lines. They say that 552A3E is not an exemption, essentially, which sounds a lot like the point you're driving at, that it's somehow different from the 552B exemptions.
No, that's not the point I was making.
Okay.
The only point I was making is, explain to me how the presumption of disclosability affects the question of this unusual case where the only issue is authority. That is, does this plaintiff have authority to seek disclosure under FOIA?
My answer is that the cases are unanimous that exemptions under FOIA have to be narrowly construed. And I think narrow construction goes not just to the facts of what can be disclosed, but in this case, since the exemption is driving at who they can be disclosed to.
But if he can't, I could file the correct request tomorrow, and Judge Griffith could do it. That's not the issue in the case.
Well, I'm going to press a little further on the presumption because I think it's actually important.
Do you think you need the presumption for your case?
Do I think I need it?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I need it.
Uh-huh.
I think that the most natural reading of the statute, representative of a foreign government entity, is someone who represents a foreign government.
Uh-huh.
And that's, of course, putting aside Mr. Sear, which I'll try to get to. But, yes, I don't think you need to reach the presumption, but I think the presumption ends the case. 552D is where the presumption is codified.
Uh-huh.
It essentially says government has to release documents unless it's clearly stated in somewhere in the section that they don't have to. The section is all of 552. It's not just B.
Uh-huh.
It's A as well. And in Taylor v. Sturgill, the Supreme Court said 552A3E is an exemption like any other. The government, let me briefly mention, also says this presumption shouldn't apply because there are foreign requesters here.
Because they're what?
Because the requesters are foreigners.
Yeah.
And I just want to quickly point to the Supreme Court's Ray decision cited in our opening brief. In that case, the requesters were Haitian nationals, and the Supreme Court applied the presumption. Let me, in the time I have left, turn to Mr. Sear. Mr. Sear is a separate requester. He represented APPG and Mr. Tyre with respect to their request, and he issued a separate request. Now it's on the same document, but the record is undisputed that it was his own request. We have a number of cases cited in our brief, and all, by the way, of the Supreme Court cases and cases from this court that speak to what a representative is, cited in our briefs, say a representative is acting as a representative when they are within the scope of what they've been authorized to do. Joe Sear, in this case, the record is undisputed, was not authorized to file a separate request. He did that on his own accord. And I think that the notion that an American citizen would be forbidden from filing a FOIA request on their own time and outside the scope of their representation is not the best and easiest reading of the statute. If the court has no questions, I'd like to reserve time for rebuttal.
That's fine. Good.
May it please the court, Charles Scarborough for the intelligence communities. A member of a national legislative body of a foreign government is a representative of a legislative of a government entity within any normal and ordinary understanding of that term. A member of parliament is, as Judge Griffith pointed out, one who represents a constituency as a member of a legislative body.
But he's a representative in a legislative body.
Well,
he's not a representative of the legislative body.
I think Judge Pillard actually put the phrase right in there, and basically when you are a member of parliament, and you know, that's the representative term, you know, defined in several
dictionaries. So what if the request is coming from a foreign court, a member of a foreign court?
The person might well be a representative of a foreign government.
In what case, in what instance would they be a representative of a foreign court?
Well, I think that...
If they had authority of that court...
No, I don't think this is something that turns on the authority question. Again, this turns on sort of...
So a judge of the Iraqi Supreme Court, and I'm completely hypothetical, I don't know much about the Iraqi judicial system, a judge of the Iraqi Supreme Court submits a FOIA request to an intelligence agency, has no authority on behalf of the Supreme Court to do that. He's not a representative of anyone. He's a member of that body. Where does he fall in?
I think that he's probably covered by the provision.
Well, how so?
Again, because if you think about these people vis-a-vis, you know, their interactions with foreign entities, I mean, it's natural to, when you talk about, to take it back to this case, when you talk about you know, someone who is sitting in parliament, you may think about them as a representative of their constituents when they are doing that. When they go out and they interact with foreign governments, like when they travel abroad, when John Boehner travels abroad, for instance, you would view him as a representative of Congress.
Well,
doesn't that
work
against you, in fact? Because I thought members of the United States government and maybe even state and local governments can travel abroad as representatives of the United States, but they have to be sort of diplomatically designated for that, and then they are representatives. You know, Secretary of Commerce goes as Secretary of Commerce, or a member, and I guess this is clearest with members of judiciary or the legislative branch, but they can also just go in their own right. And so when you're looking at a kind of diplomatic notion, which I think may in fact be what this statute was about, it points more toward someone who is a credentialed representative, someone who's an authorized representative, someone who is in some function speaking on behalf of the United States for that purpose.
Well, as the court pointed out in the colloquy with opposing counsel, the statute does not use the term agent. Doesn't
right.
use the term
well,
member.
I mean, it uses the term employee
I understand, but I think when you look at the legislative history and the statute as a whole, yeah. Congress was trying to get at what Your Honor described earlier, foreign government entities, and those with a close nexus.
Well, if you look at the legislative history, they were trying to get at foreign persons.
That is not what it says. It doesn't say someone with a close nexus.
That's correct, Your Honor.
It says, the first thing says, and all we have to go on, we don't have much to go on here, right? We have a few words in the statute, and we have dictionaries. But I want to ask you a question about that. What it looks like, tell me why this is not right. It's clear that Congress didn't want government entities, foreign government entities, right?
From filing I think that much is clear.
Yeah. And so little two looks to me like, you know, what the Congress wanted to do was to be sure that no foreign government filed it, nor that they didn't, that foreign governments couldn't get around it by having someone file it on their behalf, i.e. a representative. Now, what's wrong with that interpretation?
Well, I think that's generally correct, Your Honor. I don't think there's anything wrong with that interpretation. I don't think that forecloses our position.
Why?
Because the plain language is representative, and he falls within the plain language here. I mean, if you're talking
about because he's a representative of his constituents. You agree with that?
I'm sorry?
Not because he represents his constituents.
No, but okay. I'm talking about, for instance,
because Congress didn't use the word agent.
But right? in a sort of normal talking about a member of parliament, you would say he's a representative of the United Kingdom. And let me explain to you why that fits within
would
sort
you,
of a standard, within a standard definition, because he acts, albeit with lots of other people, to pass laws on behalf of his country. He is a representative
but
in a very real
isn't
sense.
Isn't the question whether he filed this on behalf of the British government?
I don't think that is the question, Your Honor. I mean, the statute defines this in terms of a categorical ban as to the person, not the capacity they're acting in.
So let me ask you, you rely very heavily on the fact that Congress didn't use the word agent, right?
That's one of the things that we point out, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, and have you looked at a thesaurus as opposed to a dictionary?
I'm well aware that representative and agent are used in
they're like close synonyms. In fact, I checked this morning two of them, and in both of them, the number one synonym for representative is agent. And the number three synonym for agent is representative.
Your Honor,
I'm just asking the question, how can we get any mileage out of Congress's selection of one of these words or the other? The English language is full of synonyms. Synonyms, right?
Right.
And so, you know, sure, we look at the language, but if there's almost identical synonyms, how does it get you anywhere?
I think that we view that the language Congress chose here, representative is, in some respects, if you want to start to think about Venn diagrams, a broader term.
I was just asking you about the definition, about the thesaurus. The thesaurus and the dictionary, neither the thesaurus nor the dictionary suggests that representative is broader than agent. I haven't found that anywhere.
Well, again, we point to...
A representative can be an agent, and an agent can be a representative.
That's correct, Your Honor. Even under the sort of accepted, yes. This is what I was trying to get at, even accepting sort of an agency-based view of the term representative, which is clearly out there, and we don't quarrel with that. Many courts have said it. Many dictionaries use it. Many thesauri use it. There's no question about that. But even sort of accepting that agency-based definition, Andrew Tyrie is a representative of the United Kingdom because he acts on behalf of the United Kingdom to pass laws. Now, Your Honor's response to that, I think, was, but he's not acting, you know, on the government's behalf with respect to this FOIA request. But I don't think that's the way the statute defines it. It defines it in terms of who the person is, i.e. a representative,
but
not in terms of the capacity he's acting.
In what capacity can he act for the British government?
Well, my point is that he
can he file a FOIA request on behalf of the government?
No, Your Honor. I mean, that's quite clear. But my point is simply that it's not the capacity in which he is acting, individual or official capacity. The district court addressed this and said that's not what the statute said. The statute doesn't talk about individual versus official capacity. The statute imposes a flat prohibition on disclosures to representatives of foreign government entities. He fits that under the agency-based view of the world. I mean,
doesn't that help you? Even if there were an individual capacity, official capacity distinction, it's clear that as an opposition member of parliament, together with other colleagues in parliament, he's seeking this FOIA information to fulfill his role as a public servant, not because his uncle, you know, was rendered or something. I mean, he's doing it in his official capacity as a lawmaker, no?
I think that's clear. I think that's correct, Your Honor, but I don't think we would want it to turn on that. And that's what the district court said, is it can't turn on sort of whether you disclaim to be acting on behalf of your government, because then there's all kinds of possibility for circumventions. You could have, again, the district court used the Kim Jong-il example.
Well,
he could say, I'm not acting on behalf of my government.
It seems to me that ship has left the dock. Circumvention is a certainty because the statute doesn't even bar non-citizens. Anyone can ask except for, I mean, there's a little bit of a question of, given that they, you know, what this statute is about, given that they talk about a burden imposed by non-citizen and foreign government requests, and yet the exemption only covers the governments, not the non-citizens, which is probably a small fraction, and there's nothing barring others from getting the information and giving it to them. So it seems it's a more almost like a dignitary and symbolic provision rather than actually trying to prevent important information from getting to foreign governments. Am I wrong about that?
I'm not going to sort of speculate about what Congress was trying to get at, and there's no question, as we've conceded in our brief, there's no question there's a possibility, you know, circumvention. The question is whether you construe the statute to sort of maximize that possibility.
Why do you call that circumvention?
Maybe circumvention isn't the right word.
As Judge Pollard said, I mean, the fact is there's not much at stake in this case, is there? There really isn't.
I think that's right, Your Honor. In terms of
federal agencies can fully protect themselves with the exemptions, right?
They
and
can.
Anybody but a representative, whatever that is, can ask for.
They can, Your Honor.
So the only question is whether this plaintiff is a representative.
Well, what's at stake, though, is what Congress was looking at. It was the attempt to alleviate the burden imposed here.
Right.
And so, yes, they can protect themselves through disclosures. And the question here is whether, you know, a member, when you talk, sort of, you know, explain this case in, you know, the 2 minutes in the elevator, whether a member of parliament is a representative of a foreign government entity, it doesn't really even pass the laugh test. It's clear that person is, you know, a representative of a foreign government.
What do we do about entity. Mr. Sear and the fact that he's a requester here?
He's trying to sort of wear two hats here. I mean, opposing counsel.
And one of them is a winning hat, right?
I don't think so. Well, as the district court said, you can't wear two hats. You can't sort of pretend to be somebody else. Basically, when you come in as the representative.
If he were to lose this case, then what he does the next day is file a FOIA request on his own, and he gets it, right?
In fact, Your Honor, Joe Sear has, along with the Wall Street Journal and some other domestic entities, they have filed FOIA requests here. Mm-hmm. They're not in court yet.
And there'd be nothing precluding them from giving it to
exemptions upon which some of the intelligence agencies
That's correct, and that's why it's perfectly valid for the court to say that, you know, there isn't much at stake here in terms of the bottom line in terms of disclosure. However, the statute is out there.
Sure.
And the question is whether you're going to, you know, totally eviscerate it or try to give it some meaning under its plain terms. And that's what we're asking.
We don't eviscerate statutes here, Mr. Scott.
I'm pleased to hear that.
That's not our business.
One of the sources, in addition to the dictionary and the thesaurus, that I look to try to make sense of this statute is other aspects of the U.S. Code and where they use representatives and talk about foreign governments, and there are many, many places where representatives are referred to, and in each place, it's clear that they're referred to as someone who's an agent of a foreign government, who is speaking on behalf of, who's speaking for the
and
foreign government. And I wonder if there's an argument why this provision should somehow be read differently from all these other provisions in the U.S. Code.
I don't think we're asking for the provision to be read differently. That's why we don't shy away from sort of the agency-based definition, because I think a member of parliament certainly does act as an agent on behalf of his government, the United Kingdom, when he passes laws as a, you know, sitting together with other people. He is clearly an agent of a foreign government. The question is whether what the relevant consideration is sort of what he is, you know, and again, the statute refers to a categorical ban on based on who he is, or whether it matters as to what he is doing here. And it's very strange to be talking about, you know, a FOIA requester on behalf of a foreign government. Normally you think about FOIA as, you know, that's something that citizens use to find out information about their government.
It just seems odd to me. I don't think of a congressman from Iowa as a representative of the U.S. government. I think of the president as a representative, Speaker of the House as a representative, but not a congressman. I mean, true, they represent their constituents, but do you think people really think of congressmen as representatives of people who are capable of acting on behalf of the government? Or is that your distinction there? There's no basis in the statute for inserting acting on behalf of, or do you agree that that has to be there too?
I think there's no basis for inserting it, but I think that colloquially speaking, it depends on what you think about.
The reason I ask is that you said that a member of parliament, or presumably Congress, is able as a member to act on behalf of the government by voting.
That's correct. And so that satisfies even their definition of representative.
So your position is that the representative of a foreign government is a descriptor. So it's just labeling the person. It's not to be modified or put in context as a representative for this purpose of FOIA. It's simply to say, who is this pool of people? Pool of people includes anyone who's represented the U.S. government, represented the British government. And so it's kind of anyone who's part of the government, and maybe they didn't say employee because they wanted contractors to be included, but you sort of full stop, that's the representative, and then you say, well, let's put that in this. They don't have to be a representative for purposes of the request, just for purposes of identifying who they are.
That's correct, Your Honor. And some of that, the reason for why we think that is a persuasive understanding of how the statute should be read is because FOIA, you need workable rules under FOIA. You can't have a sort of an inquiry into, you know, are you acting on behalf? Well, what did he say? Did he say he was really against, you know, his government? That sort of thing. I mean, the Supreme Court has said over and over again, you need workable rules, you need bright lines. This statute speaks in terms of bright lines.
Suppose the this parliamentary caucus has a secretary, full-time secretary. Would that secretary be barred?
I think that would be a difficult question, Your Honor.
Yeah, I know, that's why I asked it.
I don't think the court needs to.
I know we don't have to decide that. I'm trying to understand how you interpret the statute. So is that person a representative or not?
I think it depends on sort of, you know, there you probably would have to look at you know, what sort of authority, you know, she was exercising. Usually we'd be more left with the agency-based definition, as opposed to just the straightforward look, you're a representative.
What's the difference?
Yeah, what's the difference? Why?
Janitor, cafeteria worker, clerk in the research office.
Because at some level, I think that the nexus between the person and the government really falls
apart. I thought you told
us
your position, your view of this made it easy to administer.
I understand, but I was talking about with respect to these guys who clearly act on behalf of their government.
We can't decide a case that way. We can't say, at least we don't do that on this court. I know another court that doesn't. We can't say, look, this case is easy, so it comes out this way. We don't have to worry about the consequences of it. We have to do it pursuant to a principle that decides this case and applies to other cases. And so we need to understand what the implications of your argument are. And how if we rule for you in this case, and they turn around and have the secretary of the caucus file it, what will happen?
I thought your position was the secretary and the janitor are covered because they're working for the government.
I'm not sure that they have again, if we're talking about the agency-based definition, that
well,
they
I'm
have
talking about your definition.
Right. I understand, but my definition is not shying away from the agency-based definition. With respect to these members of parliament, they clearly do have authority to act on behalf of and bind their government. They make laws.
No,
they pass
not
laws.
With respect to a FOIA request.
No, but that's the point that it's not clearly not coming through is that
well,
it doesn't.
The secretary has authority to bind on behalf of the government in terms of scheduling her member or his member and. The cafeteria worker has authority to act on behalf of the government in ringing up the purchases at lunchtime. I mean, everyone has authority within their domain that the government has assigned them, and that is government work. And I'm just not sure why, given that you've eschewed agency in terms of acting on behalf of the British government vis-a-vis the FOIA request, why you would walk away from those other employees.
Is there something about the fact that the others are legislating? That seemed to be
yes. I mean, I think that is sort of a clear, bright line that shows you how they are clearly acting on behalf of a foreign
government. And so the hypothetical I gave of the judge from the Iraqi Supreme Court, he's judging, and
yes.
That's what about his law clerk?
At that point, I'm not sure whether the law clerk is the one who's sort of responsible for the thing. I don't think you would think that your law clerks are ultimately responsible or, you know, the ones who are the actors vis-a-vis
they're responsible
issuing
for something.
They're responsible for something.
Depends on the case.
Does your position turn on whether Tyree is acting in his official capacity? What if he's acting?
No.
He's on vacation. He's on sabbatical. He's doing research for a book that he's writing on his own.
It doesn't. None of my arguments turn on what the people say they are doing with respect to their, you know, their government. Whether they're acting on behalf of the government with respect to the FOIA request, they turn on whether the person is properly viewed as a representative of a foreign government entity and a member of parliament is because, again, you know, he has the authority to pass laws and he represents constituents that, you know, it fits the dictionary definitions, you know,
okay.
It says, the dictionaries say one who represents a constituency as a member
okay.
of a legislative body.
Thank
so
you.
That's our position.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does counsel have left? You can take 2 full minutes.
Sure. Thank you. Let me make 4 quick points. First of all, Judge Tatel, you asked my opponent, can he file, that is Mr. Tyree, can he file a request on behalf of the U.K. government? And his answer was no.
Right.
I think that that is dispositive of the representative question in this case.
I thought you might point that out, yeah.
Number two, Judge Pillard, you asked during the opening argument why, taking the dictionary definition of representative, you couldn't insert that into the statutory phrase and say, well, a representative is a member of a legislature and therefore they fit the definition. I sat down and plugged that into the statute. And if you substitute the word representative for member of a foreign legislative, foreign legislature, you get the statutory phrase, a member of a foreign legislature of a government entity. And so I think there are actually linguistic problems with that substitution, in addition to the fact that representative means what the cases have said it means. Number three, opposing counsel talked about workable rules. I think, first of all, I still don't understand his position, and so I'm not sure why it's a workable rule. But putting that aside, I think the mine run of cases, you're going to get a letter from a foreign government agency, a foreign government ministry, whatever the case might be. It's going to be signed by someone, and it's going to say, this ministry or this agency requests documents. It's going to be very clear. The U.S. agency is going to say, this is a request from a foreign government entity. End of story. And so I think the idea that this rule that we're suggesting eviscerates the statute or that it's unworkable doesn't hold water when you examine it. And last but not least, Judge Tatel, you asked, isn't the question whether the person acted on behalf of the government in this particular instance? The answer there, and I think this goes to the SEER issue, the answer there is yes. And I want to give you three quick citations. The NASA case we rely on said that OIG is a representative of NASA, quote, when acting within the scope of their employment. The Raines case said a congressman is a representative of Congress when, quote, authorized to represent Congress in this action. And last but not least, document 23 at page 3, below in this case, the government said that Joe Sear stands in the shoes of Mr. Tyree, quote, for all legal purposes within the scope of the agency relationship. Mr. Sear's individual request here was not within the scope of the agency relationship. He should be allowed to file his FOIA request.
Okay. Thank you. Case is submitted.